In the fall each year we all congregate, the bound all gathered at the church of Hillgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God, a freshman. Drunk and obnoxious, what Georgia fame, ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday and last thing.
Welcome to the Saturday in Athens podcast. I'm Herschel Gurley, and I am fired up tonight to be joined by Colt Ford. Colt is a Georgia native. He played golf at the University of Georgia. He is a singer, songwriter, rapper, musician, performer, and co-founder and co-owner of Average Joe's Entertainment. He has written multiple number one hits, sold millions of albums, and has had his song streamed over a billion times. Colt, we are fired up to have you, man. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, brother. So I want to start with you. I know family's important to you. It's certainly important to us as well. Your mom and daddy celebrated their 58th wedding anniversary this year. How important a role have they played in your life and your journey to this point?
Oh, Lord. My parents, I've been so unbelievably lucky to be raised by my parents. It'd be hard to really explain. They're both so unbelievable for different reasons. And I got my sports, you know, background from my dad, who's, you know, anybody around Athens, Georgia knows my dad. They, you know, Coach Brown, and he coached a lot of guys and in baseball. And And my mom was always the one that kind of held things together. It's just been unbelievable. I've been so lucky. And to be raised in a town like Athens, you kind of don't realize sometimes till you get older what an amazing town Athens was to grow up in, and especially the era that I grew up in. I'm 51 now. So the era that I grew up in there, and I talk to a lot of my buddies now, and I'm like, man, we were lucky. Like, you just don't, you know, you don't realize it. Sometimes you clearly don't think about it when you're young. You know, I remember thinking, oh man, when I was, you know, 20 or something, I thought, what do you do when you're 40? You just go off in the woods and die like an old dog or something, like, you know, you want, and I just going hard as ever. But Athens was just such a unique place to grow up in. And in the era that I grew up in, going to Clark Central, growing up with Vince Dooley and the legendary coaches there, and Irk Russell and people like that, they were there, you know, that I have known my whole life, and Billy Henderson at Clark Central and all the great athletes and stuff that I grew up with. And just what an amazing town. I mean, I wish there was, it's not quite like it used to be. It's still a great place, but I meant, growing up there was just an amazing time with some amazing parents that were always involved with everything I was doing, whether it was music or sports or whatever. I've been truly lucky and very blessed, for sure. No question.
So you brought up the role sports played in your life and your mom and daddy's role in kind of fostering that and shaping that. What was it like? We're coming up now, or this is the 40th anniversary of Georgia's last football national title. What was it like being an 11-year-old kid in Athens with Herschel running wild and the Dogs winning it all?
Good Lord. I get in this conversation with some of my other friends from other places, but it'd be hard pressed to argue that there was a better college running back or football player than Herschel Walker. And I was privileged to see every single game that 1980 season. I was at every single game. My dad was, you know, very involved with the University of Georgia. I'd known Coach Dooley my whole life. Derek, one of his sons, a year older than me, that I grew up with. And so I was at every game. Honestly, just a quick side note, at the Florida game that year, obviously with the Run Lindsey Run.
Yeah.
I always went with my dad. You know, it was just a different time. I got out of school for a couple of days. We went down to Jacksonville early and played golf for two or three days and hung out. And you know, when you're 11, you still think that, oh God, anything can happen. Everything, we're going to be all right. We're going to win. And, you know, I was on the sidelines. Actually, I was in the end zone Buck Blue was in front of us. So we were in the Florida end zone on the sideline, had our little TV from our customized van. Dad had one of the first customized University of Georgia vans that I was trying, and I'm telling my dad, I mean, dad's just beside himself. We're going to lose. This is it. It's all going to hell. I mean, it's all, you know, it's all slipping away, right? You know, and again, I'm 11. No, dad, we're going to win. No, we're going to win. And he, you know, obviously the pass happens to Lindsey Scott and he runs down the sidelines and I'm trying to watch the replay on the little TV and I'm yelling at my dad and I look up and I don't see him. He's about on the 15 or 20 yard line of the field in the middle of the damn field. And I don't think anybody in the stadium saw him because they were all watching the other end and he's kissing the ground in the middle of the field. And I don't think a single person in there saw him. Unbelievable. I mean, I was there in Knoxville when Herschel ran over Bill Bates and it was hotter than 40 hells there. They ran out of ice before the game. I mean,
oh, like Lord.
They literally ran out of ice in the stadium before the game started. That was a pretty special season. And my mom, and I just saw it at their house the other day. My mom had this a door in their house that she used to have these paint pens and she would take the animated things that would be on the cover of the Athens Banner-Herald with, you know, choking a yellow jacket or a gator or whatever. And she would take these and paint pen them on this door. And that door they still got that door and it's got Herschel's signature on it. It's got Ray Goff's signature on the door, Robert Hope. I mean, like it was just a magical time, you know. I mean, my dad been coached, you know, baseball around there and a little old car business there in Athens, but everybody knew him. And Herschel was such a quiet guy. He, you know, he didn't like the limelight. He didn't like any of that. And sometimes on Friday afternoon, Coach Dooley Love, he would come over to my dad's office and sit on the back porch and just sit there and talk with dad for hours because he just didn't want to be around the fray. And so nobody knew that he was there or anything. And, I was lucky. That was a special time watching, you know, those guys. And even back to basketball with Dominique and Terry Fair and James Banks and Vern Fleming and, you know, Eric Mauberry. I mean, I was lived and breathed that stuff. Athens and Georgia is just always be home to me, I hope.
Oh, man, that's beautiful. I can just see the joy coming out of you when you tell that, man. It's just what a gift to hear that story. So thank you for sharing that. Well, you mentioned going and golfing with your dad. Talk about the role that golf kind of played in your upbringing and then obviously kind of has kept going. I mean, it's still a lifelong passion.
It really is. I mean, about sports, just sports in general. I was a very good baseball. I was, believe it or not, and most people, I've lost some weight now, but I became famous in music as a fat guy. But I've lost some weight now, kind of getting back to where I used to be. But it's like, people, I was like, you may not believe this when you see me, but I was a pretty good athlete. I was a very good athlete, and I played every sport, and baseball, and basketball, football, and I loved baseball. My dad coached Legion baseball there in Athens and coached, you know, some of the greatest athletes that have ever came through there baseball-wise. I mean, and, you know, David Dukes and Chris Morocco and Don Perno and David Perno and Robbie Cameron. I mean, like, my dad coached Governor Brian Kemp. I mean, played for him. I mean, with all these great Legion baseball teams. And we lost in the state finals to go to the Southeastern Regionals and we lost to East Marietta in Little League and they won the Little League World Series that year. And we lost 2-1 on an era. And I was playing golf and pitching baseball and playing baseball. And that made me want to focus more on golf. Cause I was like, I pitched pretty much a no hitter against the team that won the Little League World Series. And I lost because of an error. And it, you know, it's an honor, it's an error. It happens. It's sports. I make them, still make them. But at the time I was like, I did everything I could do and we lost. And golf allowed me to go, if I lose, it's on me. I can't look at center fielder. I can't be mad at the first baseman, third base, whatever. It's like, it's all on me. So I started focusing more on golf and was lucky to become a high school All-American and a AJGA All-American and grew up with some of the legendary players like Phil Mickelson and Jim Furyk, guys I grew up playing with since we were young and we're still friends. And golf has taken me all around the world and back again, and still a big part of my life. It's been cool. I've got to play in a couple of Champions Tour events here this year, which has been something to look forward to, considering I can't do my day. Well, I say my day job, my night job, really, but I can't do my job that I love to do. But music was always really kind of my first love. I mean, I made a record. If you're familiar with a guy named Mark Maxwell, who's actually played football at Georgia, one of the greatest acoustic guitar players. I mean, like, was one of the first big studios ever in Athens that recorded people like REM and things like that. And I made a record with him my freshman year in high school in like 1982 or three. So his studio was right off of Millage Avenue. So I mean, music has always kind of been my first love. I chose golf at the time because I knew in golf, is there luck? Yes. You have luck day in, day out. That's all part of every sport. But it was, if I'm good enough, I know I can make a living. Right. And music, anybody who follows music or goes to live shows has been to plenty of shows or walked in a bar, or walked in Georgia Theater or 40 Watt or somewhere downtown and went, oh shit, that's the best artist I've ever heard. Best singer. And they never necessarily go anywhere because there's a lot of luck. It might be the right person didn't hear them, the right whatever. They couldn't chase it. They never got in front of the right person. They couldn't afford to go chase the dream or whatever. So I chose golf at the time, but I could never make music go away. And I was still trying to do music and golf, and the schedules don't really match up. So
right.
in golf, it's time to get up, and that's about when I go to bed. And music these days, so the schedules do not go together. And I find myself talking to tour players on the PGA Tour or Champions Tour when I'm literally getting ready to go to bed and they're getting up because they got early tea time. So it's, it's been great. And golf is such a wonderful game. It's one of the only sports that you can play to your, do you get up way up in age? My dad's just turned 85, on the 25th of October, and he still plays. But because of the handicap system, it allows you to go play with people at all different levels, which is what's so great about the game. And if anything's good come out of this pandemic, is golf has had a big resurgence, and it's got a lot of people back playing again, and it's got a lot of families outside and stuff together and doing that. And I think that's important. So, golf's been pretty good to me, although I played so bad this last Champions Tour event. I woke up Monday. I was like, I'm so damn glad I ain't got to play golf today, which I don't play that much, but I was kind of feeling that way. But, you know, I've had a lot, you know, I played pretty good the first one. My good is as good as their good. My bad is not as good as their bad. And that's because they do it every day and I don't. But it's still a huge honor to be a part of it. And, you know, this last one, I was a little tired. I was not really prepared. They kind of called me late, but it was like, it's such an honor. I'm not going to miss it. So I showed up, but my little sister, I'd found out she just got diagnosed with cancer. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I really just never could. You can't go out there and try to play against Ernie Els and people that are the best players in the world on the Champions Tour. And your mind is not where it needs to be. But those guys, they've been so good to me out there. The tour has been so good to me and inviting me out, and I hope I get to go do some more. I just need to practice a little bit harder, I guess.
Well, so I'm interested in the parallels between your golf career and your music career, mainly because there's some similarity in what you were talking about earlier about if you don't do well at golf, it's on you, right? The spotlight's on you, and the only person you can blame is yourself. And in a lot of ways, being a musician is similar to that. You're the one on stage. You're the one that the spotlight is on. And right. I don't know, there's some similarity in the solitude of both of those. Have you found that to be helpful to kind of mesh those or anything like that?
I think that is true in a lot of ways because of playing golf professionally and at a high level. I mean, I kind of like when the light turns red. I mean, when the nerves are, I'm one of those guys that it kind of excites. I mean, you know, and it's funny now, even now at this level where I'm at with my golf, I'll play with some guys that kind of, they still, although they can read it online and they've heard the stories, they still don't believe that I'm that guy on the golf course. And it's cost quite a few of them a lot of money to find out. I still am that guy. And I just love I just got to spend some time with Michael Jordan down at his place, his new golf course he opened. And, you know, he talking. I spent a couple hours talking with him on the porch, and just he was, you know, he was that guy. Like, okay, you really want to know? I'll be happy to show you. And I like that. You know, I mean, I really, that kind of gets me off to go. The more you push me, the more I'm going to pay attention to what's going on. And I really, I just love it. There is that similarity of being on stage. I screw up lyrics all the time. Shit happens. I meant, you know, I can remember every song to a Run DMC album from 1983 and I forget that I wrote, but I don't know. Yeah. I mean, when you're up there and the lights, I mean, there's no hiding, and that's what I love about golf. I mean, like, I played bad this last week. But I was playing in a real tour event where there's a scorecard and there's a square and I got to write a score in it and everybody can see it. So it's real easy to say you can do it or think you can do it. It's a whole different thing to, you know, to actually go out there and do it. So, but when you're out there, it is, it's just, you know, I got the band and everything's on stage, but I mean, it's just me. So if I screw up, there ain't nowhere for me to hide, and same with golf. And I think that's people ask me about that a lot. And I think it has definitely helped me in a lot of ways because of being comfortable being in it being on me. I'm not afraid to take the last shot. I'm not afraid to, I mean, I want the ball when it's clutch time. I want it. And, but at the same time, you know, you got to be willing to lose in that sense too. And I've done that before too, and I'm sure I'll do it again. I mean, you screw up words sometimes, and it's the biggest one was, I think maybe there's a festival, used to be a festival up in Minnesota. And I meant like huge, like 75,000, 80,000 people there. And one of the nights we were playing, Jason Aldean was on there that night. So we saved Dirt Road Anthem to do it. Although it's my song, obviously, it became his biggest song of his career that Brantley Gilbert and I wrote. And so we decided to do it together, which we always do when we're playing shows together. But when it got to the second verse, I was literally standing there with a mic in front of 80,000. I was like, I could not think. I've done it however many times. I had nothing. I was just standing there. And the band's playing, and Jason over the mic goes, "Well, you wrote it." And I was like, and the crowd started going crazy. I was like, "Y'all just sing the hook. That's shit. I can't remember nothing. I can't remember." It happens.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I love hearing you talk about Legion baseball and playing baseball. I come from a baseball family. Myself and two of my brothers all played in college, and love playing Legion. My brother and I are close enough in age where we got to play together and won a state championship in Legion, and just so many beautiful memories from that. And it's interesting you bring up the parallel about the, I guess, being an athlete and then being on stage and loving when the red light comes on, because there, if you look at the current country music scene in Nashville, there's a ton of ex-college athletes that are doing really well in the space. And it seems that's probably not a coincidence, right?
No, it's actually really cool. I meant to see, you know, there's a lot. I meant Jake Owen was going to try to walk on at Florida State and play golf. I mean, you got Brett Young now, who actually pits in the Dodger organization, and Chase Rice was a linebacker starter at the University of North Carolina. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were good athletes. Kip Moore, who grew up in Tifton, Georgia, played golf at Valdosta State. And there's a lot of guys that were really good athletes. And it's funny. I've had this conversation with other entertainers that are actually, this is pretty kind of behind the scenes kind of stuff, which I guess is fine for what we're doing. People will be interested. I've seen things that have happened in the music industry, and I'm like, wow, that bothered somebody. Like, I couldn't understand it. And I'm like I grew up in a playing sports and on teams where it's like, that shit just wouldn't have been an issue. I mean, like, we would have dressed it. We would have gone outside and fought or whatever. Then we would have got back to work and gone on with what
right.
we were doing.
Right.
And my conclusion from all that is to say that I've some of the guys that I've seen where I see the differences are where those things happen, I'm like, wow, you just didn't grow up like in that environment. They grew up more sheltered, just playing the music and hiding, you know, staying in their room and learning how to be, which there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mean that ugly. It's just like, it's just a different mindset. And yep. I'm like, that would have never, like, I'd hear stuff even within my own band. I'm like, now how long has that been going on? And my band was like, 4 months. I'm like, no shit, 4 months. That's been like, that doesn't, you know, you grow up in a locker room, like that don't happen. And it lasts 4 minutes before somebody's like, all right, we're going to figure this out if we're going to be a team. And so there are some neat parallels to sports and the music. And there are some things that are hard to understand sometimes from the sports and the music, because you know, like I said, there's times I've been like, wow, I don't understand that. I mean, and as I've talked to some of my closer friends that are former, you know, that were good athletes. So like Brantley was a very good high school athlete, Justin Moore and some guys. It's like, wow, I guess, yeah, it's just a different mindset. Just grew up in a different playing sports and taught you some different things. And that's why I still think sports are so important for our young, for our kids and to continue to play and play multiple things. And I'm not a big fan of everybody gets a trophy. I didn't grow up in that era.
Me neither, brother.
And when you're raised by coaches like that I grew up under, like my dad, you know, my dad, and then growing up at Clark Central with Billy Henderson and guys that were around that, I mean, and watching Vince Dooley and people like legends my whole life, it's like, nah, I don't care who your daddy is. I don't care what you do. Best players play. It's the way it is. If you don't win, you don't get no damn trophy. That is, I mean, that's not a, I just disagree with that coddled way of raising. I mean, I think sports builds character and you lose a hell of a lot more than you win. That's the way sports is. So you got to learn to get back up and be tough and go back and work some more. And if you really want that trophy, then by God, you can earn it. You just shouldn't get it for free.
Well, you talk about earning it. I got to ask you about this. You shot 66 at Pebble. Just talk to me on that. I want to know what kind of zone you're in that day and how awesome was it doing it in that setting at that kind of hallowed place?
It was awesome. That was my first year there. I was playing with Billy Horschel, who's a great friend of mine, although he's a Florida Gator.
Nobody's perfect.
No, nobody's. He's got to have some kind of flaw. He's in great shape and world-class golfer, and he's rich, and he's went to Gators. That's his bet. That's he played at Florida. But it was just one of those days. The first round we played was Monterey Peninsula Club, and it was 70 degrees, dead sunny, no breeze. And it was funny because a lot of the guys and a lot of the former players that I grew up with are giving me a whole bunch of crap. They're like, oh, this isn't fair. You're getting to play the up tees a little bit. I'm like, first of all, hold on. The first year I got in Pebble, I weighed 320 pounds. So just walking for 4 days, that is bullshit. I didn't like it at all. I got done. I was like, I need a vacation from this. I was so exhausted. But first day, you're excited, everything. It was just the golf course is not playing very long. And they were giving me a bunch of crap. And I'm like, wait a minute. You were giving me one shot. So I was getting one stroke. Yes, I played good. I did used to do it for a living. I'm playing a short golf course, perfect conditions, no wind. Come on. Nobody said anything about the guy from Pandora Jewelry who's a 12 and shoots 76 with 4 natural birdies. And I'm like, hey, I'm the guy that y'all are bitching about. You got this guy, if you brought that guy to your member guest, you'd get killed and ran out of your club. I'm at like a 12 can't shoot 76 and make 4 birdies. I'm sorry, but you can't. So, you know, it's been fun. I've had some good rounds out there. I played pretty good again this year. And it's just been fun to be a part of the whole deal.
Well, so what was the transition like from playing on the mini tours and trying to make it in the golf world when you were younger and then transitioning into the teaching space at clubs and then finally going at some point, all right, look, I got a leap here. I got to go full force in and try to chase this music dream and see where that goes. What was kind of the turning point for you on that? And when did you decide to leap and do that?
I love teaching golf. I really do. And I'm not to pull my chain. I'm good at it. I have a very good knack for it. I was raised around, I was lucky enough to be taught by some of the world's greatest teachers. And I really loved it. I loved teaching. But music, I could never turn it off. I could never make it go away. And I was always writing and work. I mean, I just never could make that go away. And at the time I was teaching a pro over at River Club in Atlanta, a very nice club, a really nice high-end place, and was doing great. And my buddy Charlie Reimer, who used to be on the Golf Channel, played on tour, was announced on the Golf Channel, played on tour, played at Georgia Tech, one of his bad qualities.
That's right.
But we decided to start a business. We just had the opportunity to start a business, and it was kind of a travel, you know, like guys like to go to Europe or Scotland or wherever to play golf. And Charlie and I thought we knew some people, we could put it together where we would take these CEOs and their people, not just plan the trip, but we'd go with them. So you got two former professionals that played on the tour. One's an announcer on TV, and the other one is a golf teacher that teaches a lot of top amateurs and tour pros. And it started off unbelievable. And then it was 2007 when everything kind of went, the economy went bad, and it was just a bad timing for the business. And I just decided, I was at a PBR event, professional bull riding event. And my wife, Jessica at the time said, you need to write a song about the PBR. And I'm like, a song about PBR. You know, I was just like, whatever. And she kept on me about it. I'm like, fine, I'll write the song, just cause she wouldn't stop me. And I knew the CEO of the PBR, Randy Bernard, who's now used to be CEO of IndyCar. He's actually now Garth Brooks' co-manager. And I called him up and I sent the song to him, and he texted me back immediately. I was like, oh my God, this is great. We want to use this for our 2008 season. It's going to be a theme song. He's like, can we get it? Who did it? And I texted back, I did it. And immediately the phone rings. He's like, wait a minute, this is bullshit. You play golf. What are you talking about with this song? And I was like, well, you didn't know this, but I also do music. And he was like, this is crazy. But that's kind of how it started. And, you know, I just started, I just could never make it go away. And I took a crazy leap of faith, and it was crazy, I admit. I mean, it was at 36 or 7 years old to go, oh, by the way, I'm going to go be in country music, and I don't know anybody in the industry, and I'm going to do it a little bit differently, and I'm going to be 300 pounds with a cowboy hat. I don't look like Luke Bryan. I meant, and everybody's like, yep, you're nuts. You're really nuts. And my mom has always told me I was hard headed. So I don't know. When I wrote Ride Through the Country, which took me about 2 weeks to write this record, I mean, it just kind of came out when I really decided to be myself as an artist. Like, I spent a lot of time in music chasing things that were fads or things that worked. And it's like, it never completely worked. It's like, it's not who I am. When I decided to really be myself, that's when Colt Ford really came to life. And it just, you know, here we are 13, 14 years later, and 7 albums and, you know, billion streams. I mean, it was just crazy to me. I never thought that would ever happen. And I've just been a lucky guy, man. I really have. I know you got to have some talent and ability, and that's all true, but I've had a lot of breaks and a lot of people help me along the way. And I'm very thankful for that.
So I want to unpack a couple things in there a little bit. First thing is, you mentioned being yourself and things taking off after that. Did I read that at the beginning of your musical journey that you had gone to Atlanta and taped an album with Jermaine Dupri?
Yeah, yeah. Jermaine and I worked together when we were young. We did Crisscross record together. And it's funny, Jermaine and I have been talking again lately about making some more music together, which is fun. You know, he just went in the World Songwriter Hall of Fame. I mean, easily more than, when you start talking about those guys, there's some other names that people might know a little bit more for whatever reason, but when it comes to, if you locked him in the room with the Dr. Dre's and the other guys, like I don't think any of those guys can come close to being as talented as Jermaine is. I mean, he could write the song, he could play instruments, he could dance, he could rap, he could say, I mean, like, not those guys were all talented, don't get me wrong, but they had this guy play the keyboard, or this guy, I mean, like, Jermaine could do all that stuff himself, and was, you know, the like Crisscross, I mean, he wasn't even 20 years old when he made that record. I mean, like, I was driving him to the studio. He didn't even have a car. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you know, and when we were doing that, we didn't know. It was just kids trying to make music. We didn't know that would be 14, 15 million records and go on tour with Michael Jackson. But again, the stuff I was doing there was maybe not necessarily who I really was. And, you know, maybe that's why it didn't work. I mean, it was a cool experience to be a part of, but, you know, here we are with me being honest about who I am as a person and an artist. And that's when it really started working for me.
So I grew up in a small town, country place, right?
All right.
And loved country music, but always loved hip hop and R&B too, you know, and, right. JD was one of my favorites. I mean, when I was 14, I remember just rocking Money in the Thing about Burned a Hole in the CD, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you're right. You know, he's underrated from I think what his contributions have been and how talented he is. And yeah, that's a great point. And so I want to pivot off of that because I want to go to Ride Through the Country being, you said it just kind of poured out of you. And I think there's something to that with you just kind of saying, look, I'm going to be me. And this is the story I want to tell, and I'm going to let it rip. And I can remember in late 08, early 09, you know, satellite radio was just becoming a thing then. And I remember riding down the road one day in my brother's Explorer because he had satellite radio. I mean, he was fancy. So I didn't have that.
And that's when it was just called XM11.
Yeah. And Ride Through the Country came on. And I was like, man, this song like speaks to me on so many levels because it sounds like stuff from how I grew up, but it's also delivered in a way that kind of mixes the two genres of music that I love.
Right.
And I don't know, man, it struck a chord with me. And obviously it struck a chord with a lot of other people too. Have you found that to be a common story from folks that you've talked to over your journey the last 15 years?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably the most common thread is like, you're talking to us, you're talking about my life, the way that I live. And then, you know, again, there was that element of parents. I'd get parents every night come to shows and go, oh my God, we're so thankful for you, because I don't mind my 12-year-old listening to you. And it, that's one of the coolest things ever. I remember Luke Bryan, when Luke was like, I ain't never seen 60-year-olds and 66-year-olds sing the same damn song, but they sing your songs that way. And that's so cool to me. I mean, I get parents to just go, me and my son, I mean, we listened to that. And it's, you know, I mean, I don't know how old you are and if you got kids, but it, you know, mine are about grown now, but it's like, you don't have that much where it's like, man, this at 13 or 14 or 12 or 10, we're like, I love this. And my mom and dad both love this too. And my grandparents, like, that just doesn't happen much. And so I've been really blessed that that's the case. And, you know, this music is so powerful. It transcends politics and religion. And it's a powerful thing. I mean, it really is. It's a really powerful thing. And music, I love it so much. I love creating it. I love writing it. I love being on. It's killed me this pandemic. I've averaged about 130 shows a year for over 12 years, 13 years, and I don't even have 40 this year. So and it ain't just for me, it's the fans. And then I start my band, my crew, you know, I paid them out for first couple of months. Then I was able to get some PPP money to pay my guys. And, you know, you got 10, 11 guys on salary. And then all of a sudden August comes and it's like, I don't have any money. I got no shows. I got no money. And it's like, this isn't a hobby for them. This is what they do.
Right.
You know, it's really, and again, it's hurt a lot of people in a lot of ways. It's really decimated the music industry and the entertainment industry as a whole. I just lost one of my guitar players that's been with me 8 years. All he's ever done is play music for a living, and he's packed up his gear and moving back to Idaho.
Oh, man.
It's like, this is taking his life's work, man. I mean, and I get it. I mean, it's just bad. It's just bad. I mean, I'm ready to get back to it. I want to be safe for everybody, but at some point, you know, we just can't stay in the house. At some point, we've got to go back living our life.
I mean, yeah. Some point we got to live. I've thought the same thing. You speak to this, and there's so many, I think, unspoken tragedies like that out of this. You know, you think about now we're in college football season, and think about all those college towns in the Southeastern Conference that those businesses need that weekend. You know, they need those home weekends, and, you know, it just breaks your heart, brother. I mean, and, you just hope there's a path forward. And look, we serve a great Lord. So I know it's coming, and we just got to be patient on it, and his time, not our time. So, just have faith in that and roll, man. But I know that's easier said than done.
Just the towns. I'm in Athens. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of things that work because of Georgia football there. I mean, you know, I get a call from my son and it's like, Eurowraps closed down for good. And I mean, it's like, wait, what? I can't go get a barbecue chicken wrap anymore. I mean, like, it's not there. And that's sad, but we got to figure out a way. We got to figure out a way to do it and do it together. And, you know, obviously all this election stuff is pretty crazy right now. And I'm kind of sick of all of it, to be honest with you. I just, it, It's just not that complicated. Just be a good person, man. I mean, I don't give a crap what color you are, black, white, blue, whatever. If you're a good person, you're cool with me. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care about none of that. I mean, and, you know, you just be a good human being and try to be a good steward towards other human beings. I mean, it just ain't that damn complicated.
Well, I know how important being a dad is to you, and I've got four kids of my own, and I think one of the more compelling things about your story is, and I was having this conversation with my son earlier this week. We've been talking a lot lately about gifts and that God blesses us all with gifts. And it's part of our duty in our journey to try and use those gifts to honor him. And you have been, I would say, one of the rare folks who has used two of his gifts to reach the zenith of that path. Right. And I'm just interested. What do you tell your kids when they ask you about chasing their dreams and utilizing their gifts? What is your perspective on that? And what kind of words would you share with them and with our listeners?
I agree with you 100%. And I get asked that a lot, you know, like, why you golf and music, they don't grow together and everything. And this is something that I tell everybody. And it's funny, as you get older, you remember things your parents said. And back to my amazing folks. My mom's told me my whole life, God never gives anything he doesn't intend for you to use. And so I was gifted enough to play golf and to write songs and play music. And I've been lucky to be able to do those at both at a really high level. There's no question. I've been lucky to do that. But I mean, again, there is luck involved. You just can't let anything stop you. If it's what you believe and what you dream, You just gotta go get it. I mean, you don't, you know, my dad, I think about all the sayings he used to say, and you know, I mean, you can go around and tell everybody how great you are all you want, but when they're really great, they'll tell you. And so stuff like that is what I've learned to fall back on. And when you talk about faith and everything, my father is a super, super strong man of God, and my mom and dad both are. You know, all the times I've sat around and listened to my dad pray and pray at dinner or whatever. And every time that I can recall in my 51 years, he would always end his prayer with, "Help us to be mindful of the many needs of others." That is something that we all need to be remembering and pass down to our kids and everything. It's my kids have been lucky. They've been blessed. I meant to have some things, but there's a lot of them that kids and other parents that don't have that same kind of thing. And you got to remember that. And when you have the opportunity to help somebody, do it. Just do it. If you have the opportunity to be nice to somebody or open the door or say thank you and play like that kind of stuff has kind of been forgotten in a lot of ways. And it's still real important. It's still real important.
Oh, well, amen to that, brother. And hey, man, thank you for sharing your story with us. We love it and love everything you're doing. We close all our interviews the same way. We do the Smart 16 questions and honor Coach Smart, kind of like a lightning round type thing. So I'm gonna fire it at you and get your answers here. All right.
Come on.
All right. First one is, what's your middle name?
Ferris.
All right. Who is your favorite dog of all time?
My favorite dog of all time. Oh, wait, sorry. My personal dog or bulldog?
Bulldog.
Ball player. Oh wow. Man, I've been lucky to know a lot of guys that played football at Georgia. Good Lord, I'm my favorite one. I don't know, man. I mean, I've been lucky. I know a lot of guys. Honestly, I was really good friends with Andre Hastings. Andre and I were really good friends. I thought for sure that you know, that is a good example of a guy I thought for sure was a can't miss NFL guy that, and I'm not sure where Dre is now, but I don't know that I could have a favorite. There's so many guys I've known over the years and grown up around. I'm just a dog fan in general.
All right. What is your favorite game you've either attended, watched on TV, just favorite dogs game you've ever been a part of?
It had been that Georgia-Florida game in 1980. Yeah, I mean, the national championship game was cool, too, and all that. But, I mean, that game right there, that 3 or 4 days I got to spend with my dad. And, you know, I'm 10, 11 years old, and all my dad's friends were, you know, obviously older than me. But I could beat all them in golf, so I was a scratch golfer at that age, too. So to play golf and hang out and get to see that and, you know, maybe being the only person in that stadium to watch my dad out there kissing the ground, right? And it was that's a pretty cool one.
Oh yeah, that is an epic story. What a memory, man. Well, maybe I know the answer to this based on your other answers, but what is your favorite rivalry that the Dogs have?
Wow, I mean, Georgia has so many good ones, and I mean, you know, it's you can't argue with Georgia, Florida, but you can't order with good old fashioned hate and Georgia Tech. And you know what I miss more than anything, quite honestly, I miss Georgia Clemson. I miss that a lot.
Yeah,
my mom's from Anderson, South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
So my mom was a Tiger at her heart, but she's a diehard Bulldog, except when they're playing Clemson. And so there was two ceramic Tigers my mom had. And if Clemson won, they got to sit on the mantle for the year to the next game. And one of them, they both magically disappeared at some point. And until this day, my dad has never said where they've gone or where they are or what happened to them. I'm pretty sure he broke them and hit them or did something to them. yeah, I really missed that rivalry a lot. I thought that was really good.
Well, that's good then, because opening the year next year, y'all can be house divided again. They got something to have some heat over.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. What is your favorite away stadium in the Southeastern Conference?
Boy, I mean, LSU at a night game in Baton Rouge is something else. I mean, and back then, especially, and it's been a while since I've been working on Saturdays most of the time, so I don't get the game. So back then too, it was kind of one way in, one way out, Death Valley. I don't know if it's like that still, but like it was a nutty place on a Saturday night. That's wild. Baton Rouge is wild on Saturday night.
All right. What is the loudest home game you've ever attended at Sanford Stadium?
Oh Lord. I couldn't even tell you, I haven't got to go to a game. I don't think I've been to a game in the last 10 years, honestly, because I'm working every Saturday. So, as the stadium's expanded with the fans, I don't know. I've been to a lot of loud ones. I don't know that I could ever say what would be the loudest. It was probably something from when I was a lot younger, for sure.
All right, I have a tangential question off this because we interviewed Ray Fulcher a couple months back, and we asked him, when you're a big fan of a team, like we all are, of the Dogs, are you conflicted when you're looking at the schedule and you see that the Dogs have a night game and you're like, oh, man, I got a show that night. Like, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to keep track? Like, what are those emotions like?
It is, and it, you know, there's lots of times when I've got whether my sound guy, my crew guy, and I'm at one of my monitor guys, he's diehard. He's Oklahoma State guy, so he's pretty bitter about last week. But, I mean, I'm like, all right, give me the damn updates. Because I got my in-ears in, and he'll be like, Georgia just scored. I mean, I'm like, don't do it while I'm in the middle of a song. But in between, there's definitely some updates going on.
Yeah. All right. This is one where you're allowed to have two answers, because, again, we gave Ray two answers on this. But you get to choose the headlining act at the Georgia Theater. Who do you choose?
Wow. If it wasn't me, I mean, I remember seeing, I don't know how old you are, I saw REM with Blues Travelers as direct support with Dave Matthews opening for $8. You couldn't see that for $800.
I mean, you sure couldn't, brother.
Being the nosebleed, it probably cost you $8,000 to be on the floor for that. I mean, so I don't know. I've been so lucky to see some great acts there. I don't know. I've had a lot of fun there. I remember my first time when Brantley and I played there, and the first time I sold it out myself. And then I did one of the few things that had never been done there, just being my hometown. I did a Friday night, Saturday night show, both sold out, but I did a Saturday afternoon show with 18 and under.
Oh, and, that's cool.
It was really cool. And I got, you know, kids going, holding up Clark Central yearbooks, trying to show me their mom that went to high school with me. Pretty dang old, but it was still pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
I went there before it burnt, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember getting
the call the next day. They're like, what'd you do? I was like, I didn't do nothing. I don't smoke. I didn't do nothing. so yeah, but I'm glad it got restored and saved, and it's still such an iconic place.
What was it like your first time seeing your name on that kiosk, on that marquee, being from there, and how important music is to that town? What was that feeling like for you?
Just surreal, you know. And even though that place, you know, is not, you know, it's not like you're playing some stadium or something, but it's Georgia Theater. And I mean, if you grew up around there where we did, that's a big dang deal. and just, you know, for my parents to be there. And like, I think had snuck my kids in there, maybe, I don't know. They were too young to get in there, but it was just surreal. And looking out, you know, and you're trying to do your show, but at the same, and you're looking at trying to catch faces in the crowd that you know. And I wear the shades on stage, and it's one of those things I started doing at the beginning. It's like, wow, I wish I kind of hadn't started doing that. Now I can't, you know, it's because sometimes I can't see, and people are like, I was waving at you. I was like, if you were past the first two rows, I can't see nothing. I'll take them off at least some during the shows so I can see. But just to look out and see people you grew up with or went to high school with singing along to your songs, and it's pretty special feeling. Hadn't played there in a long time. I need to get back and play there.
Well, we will be in attendance next time you're there. I'll promise you that. I will miss that. All right, so big weekend this weekend, world's largest outdoor cocktail party, one of my favorite weekends of the year every year. What is the cocktail you're mixing each year for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party?
This is no lie. This is one of those things that people do not believe. I'm not a drinker. Never have been. I swear. I mean, Justin Moore one day, he's like, man, drink this Crown. I was like, I don't drink. He's like, what do you mean? I've done these. You don't drink? I'm like, that's because you're always drunk. You don't know that I'm not drinking. But I honestly, just not a drinker. I've never have been. I meant, you know, I can pour them for everybody else. It's just never really been my thing. So two things that people never believed. I was like, they don't believe I don't drink. They don't believe I don't really eat sweets and stuff. And I'm like, I realize I look like I do both of those things well. But I just never been my thing. No kidding. It's weird, but it's just never been my thing.
Well, you're working too hard to drink, brother. You playing golf on the front end and playing music on the back. You ain't got time to have drinks, yeah, man.
I've played with Toby. I'm like, you just drank 7 Jack and Cokes and we go on stage in 2 hours. Like, how do you do that? I'm easy. If I do have a couple people laughing, they're like, oh my God, you give me a couple of drinks and I'm done for.
All right. You're back in Athens for one meal. What's your favorite place to eat in Athens?
I would have loved to go to Euros. I swear that was like my son and I loved it so much. It's been part of my childhood. I mean, like, I would give anything to go there. And if I wasn't going there, I'd probably go to the Varsity. Another place that's just pretty iconic for me.
All right. Do you have any game day superstitions, or when you were a kid, did you have any game day superstitions? Or let me put it this way, because you're still actually an active athlete. So do you have any superstitions before you head out on the course for a round?
I don't. I know lots of my, you know, professional golfer friends and other athletes, and a lot of guys do have. I've never been a superstitious guy. And the same way with music, I have people on the bus, and they're like, okay, we need to get off before you can get ready to show. I'm like, nah, I'm ready. I meant, like, you don't have to do anything. I was like, put my hat on, put my boots. I play music. I'm not a neurosurgeon. Like, I don't have to get in a special place. It's like, hey, the crowd, they're here. Let's go. I mean, I just love it. I don't get into all that kind of stuff. I mean, I know some people do, and it's important for them. And just another thing that's never been my thing. I always feel like, you know, it's going to be what it is. I'm going to thank the Lord, whatever it is, and just go get after it.
All right. What's your favorite Sanford Stadium pregame tradition? Whether it's dog walk, lone trumpet, redcoat marching band, spelling out Georgia, what's your favorite?
Golly, man. We used to park, I mean, and everything has changed so much for my dad. We used to park the van in this little parking lot, you know, probably 300 yards from, maybe 300 yards from the sidelines. We sat right there about the 45 and club level my whole life. I mean, and that was back when, I can't even imagine, like, when I was even taking my son over there, I couldn't do it. But when I was 12 years old, I ran all over that damn stadium. I mean, it wasn't nobody worried about somebody taking you or just such a time. I mean, like, every day there and every Saturday, there's all these different people that, you know from tailgating, and there's fried chicken here, and there's Varsity chili dogs and onion rings here, and, you know, you're throwing the football. I mean, I just – I can't tell you the times my dad, I can't remember the name of that street, but my dad would always cut down this one-way street, and I can't tell you the number of times we've got pulled over, and they all know my dad, and they're like, coach, this is a one-way street. And my dad would always go, I'm only going one way. It's like, coach, stop doing this. Of course, never, he'd do it again next Saturday, but he never got a ticket, though.
All right, black jerseys, yes or no?
I don't have a problem with the black jersey. I'm a silver britch. I'm red, and silver britches are white. That's like arguing about, you know, the James Bond, you know, who you like more. Obviously we just lost Sean Connery, but I grew up with, you know, I grew up in a different era. So it's, I like Roger Moore because that's what I grew up. So I like those 80s uniforms are my jam for sure.
What is the loss you're still not over?
Oh man. I've learned to get over it pretty good. Some guys take a little bit harder. I've learned to let stuff like that go. I don't know that there's anyone that, you know, I mean, that first Alabama thing, I mean, that hurts to you to not be able to figure out a way to beat them yet. And they've, you know, done it different ways. And I've actually thought the last three times we kind of had them, we beat them most of the game, except if you get to the end of the scoreboard, and it didn't look that way. And as I was just talking about that with my golf, was like, you look at that score, and I'm like, I really hit it better than that. I just made a couple of dumb mistakes, and it doesn't look like I did, but I mean, and that's kind of what's happening with that. So I don't ever like, you know, my dad used to tell his team, he's like, I don't want guys that love to win. Everybody wants to win. I want guys that absolutely despise to lose. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited. I was good friends with Coach Rick. I loved Mark. I loved Jim Donnan. We're still good friends. I think what Kirby's doing, I mean, he's instilled that mentality of guys like, you want to be here, you're going to be on board with this program, and we are here to do serious business. When it's time to go to work, we go to work. And I love that about what he's doing with our program and what he's instilling in what's going on there right now. I mean, and every loss sucks to me. I don't ever want.
Yeah, same with us, brother. They're all bad. I'm so glad you brought up the varsity. This is the number 14 question on our Smart 16. What is your order at the varsity?
Well, it'd be 3 chili dogs, an onion ring, and a large Coke with a lot of ice. Literally, that comes up so many times when we're on the road, and I'm way away from home, and I'll go, all right, I swear to God, I'd give $200 a piece for chili dogs on the varsity. Right, I could make $600 off of me so quick. That's one of my go-to sayings when I'm really hungry and we're stuck somewhere, or if I'm on the West Coast or something, it's like, oh my God, I'd do anything for friggin' varsity right now. I'd gut shot a Cub Scout.
Well, so you'll appreciate this then. Every time I have to fly somewhere and I have to connect, if I can connect through Atlanta, I'll do it just so I can meander my way over to the terminal and pick me up a couple chili dogs and a frosted orange before I hit that next flight.
I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you there's been a lot of flights that have been determined by how much layover time I had in Atlanta. I promise. If I'm flying through, my band leader and tour manager knows, like, I know you want to fly Delta, because Nashville is not, you know, it's very Southwest, whatever. So I'm like, yep, okay, I want to fly Delta. And if I got to go through somewhere, I need you to send me through Atlanta, and I need at least an hour and a half. That way I can get to the varsity.
That's it, brother. I'm right there with you.
Planned around getting to the varsity, believe me.
Yep, I'm here for that.
Atlanta Airport too, so that's great.
That's right. All right, there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing noon kickoffs. Yes or no?
It doesn't bother me. I mean, but I grew up, you know, in the 80s, there were so many. I mean, it was like, it didn't bother me. It's like, I just knew, I mean, the van was going to be parked over there. Probably dad would have the van parked over there the night before. So, I mean, like, you knew, like, 9 o'clock in the morning at a 12 or 12:30, like, we were going to already be, it's already going. So, that ain't never bothered me. I guess maybe I could see why that's an odd time for some people, but I mean, I don't know. It's never, I don't know what people's consensus is on that, but it ain't never bothered me.
All right, last question. College football playoff, expand to 8 teams or find how it is?
I think 8 teams would be good. I do. I don't know that there's necessarily a correct answer. But, I mean, when you look at some of the situations that have happened over the last, you know, half dozen years, you know, there's definitely some teams that are getting, you know, are getting shut out that probably should get an opportunity to play. And I get the whole thing, but look, what's one more game? I mean, that's really what that's really what we're talking about. So, right. What's one more game to make sure we have a clear and concise, where there's nobody going, oh, well, if they would have played them, it's like, well, I think 8 would be pretty good. I mean, what's generally the most exciting thing in college sports is March Madness, and that's 64 teams. So they play a lot more games during the year. So I mean, like, that's a hard argument when people go, you know, well, they play already. It's like, yeah, well, they played this many. I mean, NFL's playing this many, baseball's playing 162. So it's like, you know, it's what's one more game to make sure you got to. I just want a clear and concise winner. And I don't know that four teams always gives us that, although it does a lot. I mean, you like it or not like it, LSU was the best team in the country last year. I don't care what anybody. I think LSU could have finished in the upper half of the NFL last year. So, and this year, I don't know that they could beat it. They can't beat nobody. So it happens. But I think it'd be nice to have a couple more teams in there.
All right, that's the smart 16. You're off the hot seat.
I appreciate it.
All right, Cole. Well, thanks, man. We certainly appreciate it, and we will link all your socials in our show notes so everybody can go follow you. Everybody, please go and support Colt. Just not a better guy out there, not a more hardworking guy, not anybody more passionate than the dog. So we certainly should support him and trumpet him as best we can. So we certainly enjoyed it, Colt. Thank you for the time, brother.
That I appreciate. I'm sorry it took me so long for us to get it together, but let's do it again sometime, and go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Hey, George is better now.